Peter Mayle is one of those charmed individuals who has been able to make a living by living the good life. In 1986, Mayle and his wife left London to live in a 200-year-old farmhouse in Aix-en-Provence. His first book, the runaway bestseller, A Year in Provence, celebrated the sensual wonders of the French countryside, food, wine, and magnificent sunsets. His ninth book, a novel, has just been published. A Good Year is also set in that idyllic part of the world and tells the story of a London banker who inherits a vineyard. Peter Mayle is in the studio. Welcome. It's so nice to meet you.
Thank you very much, Jan.
The main character in this book seems not to be Max Skinner, the banker, but wine itself. What is it that so fascinated you about wine, and the more important, the business of wine?
There are many things, really. First of all, I have to admit to a personal bias. I like drinking it. That's one thing. But there are many other things, one of which is that to many people it's rather an intimidating subject. There are so many wines, there are so many years, there are so many chateaus, there are so many bits and pieces of ritual and so forth, that it's confusing. So what we do as a result of that is we tend to accept from our wine people, some of whom are more expert or less expert than others, we tend to accept what they tell us, so that we are basically abandoning the judgment of our own palates in favour of taking somebody else's judgment. Because there is a sort of lack of intimate knowledge of the subject, then it's interesting as a writer to explore how it's manipulated, how it's perhaps, one might say, abused from time to time.
You used to write advertising copy for wine in London?
A long time ago, I worked for a company of shippers called Grants of St. James's, and they imported French wines, and we had to try to sell those to the great British public.
Did you have to find all these kinds of adjectives to describe what is essentially plonk?
Well, the best adjective to describe what is essentially plonk is cheap. No, but, well, I mean, one exercised the dictionary quite a lot, but never to the extent of some of the things that are happening today.
I'd like you to read a little section of the book. I can set it up just a little bit. What's happened is Max Skinner, the banker, has inherited this vineyard, and there's a small group of vines that is a little unusual, and it turns out to be producing a wine that people are selling for like $100,000. A case. And this is a scene in which there are Asian gentlemen who have come to a wine tasting to taste this, what you call coin perdu. And my French is lost
corner.
Lost corner. Yeah. The lost corner of the vineyard.
Godforsaken spot.
That's it. That's it. And this is the scene in which the gentleman who is trying to sell the wine is asking the Asian gentleman to taste it.
That's right. It takes place in a townhouse in Bordeaux, this particular scene, and the Frenchman is, as most, I always think of him as Dominique de Villepin in looks, at any rate, and we all know what he's like, a rather elegant creature. Anyway, he's saying, "Time to put your noses to work, gentlemen." The Frenchman led by example, bowing his head over his glass, and the room was silent, except for the sound of wine-scented fumes being funneled up into 20 receptive nostrils. And then, tentatively at first, but with increasing confidence, came the verdicts, delivered in accents that had their origins in Hong Kong, Tokyo, Seoul, and Shanghai. Violets were mentioned, and vanilla. One outspoken soul, more imaginative than the rest, was heard to murmur, "Wet dog," causing a momentary elevation of the Frenchman's eyebrows. But this was little more than a prelude to the verbal acrobatics that followed once the wine had been taken into the mouth, chewed, rolled around the tongue, allowed to irrigate the back teeth and infiltrate the palate, before being consigned to the spittoons, with Mademoiselle de Salis waiting behind the table, armed with a supply of linen napkins for the less accomplished spitters. How does one describe the indescribable? The buyers, now that they had tasted, did their best with evocations of leather and chocolate, pencil shavings and raspberries, complexity and depth, backbone and muscularity and hawthorn blossom, of almost anything, in fact, except grapes. Notepads were produced and scribbled on. The buyer from Shanghai, evidently a gentleman with dynastic interests, offered the opinion the wine was undoubtedly more Tang than Ming. And through it all, the Frenchman nodded and smiled, complimenting his guests on the perspicacity of their palates and the felicity of their comments.
When you get wine buyers who are going after a wine that, in your fiction setting, is going for, they try to sell it for $75,000 a case, $80,000 a case. Do they actually drink it?
Oh, no, most of them don't. I think one character in the book says something that I believe to be true, and when he's trying to sell it on and make a markup on it, and his colleague is saying, "Oh, I don't know if I can run to that. How does it taste?" And the seller says, "Taste? What's taste got to do with it? This isn't for drinking. This is for buying and selling."
You describe someone who puts the wine on his mantelpiece to sort of for people to admire, like a painting.
Well, there was this apparently true incident in the Napa Valley, the annual Napa auction, the wine auctions there, and somebody paid $500,000 for a bottle of a wine called Screaming Eagle, which is a highly reputable, so I'm told, Cabernet Sauvignon. Well, you know, $500,000, give me a break. I could buy a lifetime supply of superb wine for $500,000, let alone a bottle, which I would never drink, because once you throw the empty bottle into the trash, it's all over, isn't it?
So how much liquid research went into this book?
Great deal. I'm afraid to say, God, how I slaved over the corkscrew. No, but I have some great... as the book takes place both in the Provence and in Bordeaux, I had to sample, you know, copiously in both parts of France. And I'm lucky enough to have friends and neighbours who make wine. And so I hung around with them for a long time. And it was much better than, you know, peering around in a library for doing your research. It was just terrific fun.
Peter Mail is the author of A Good Year, just published by Knopf. It's nice to meet you. Thanks again for coming in.
Thank you for having me, Liam.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen.